All right, welcome into another episode of Preacher in the Hat. I believe this is episode 11. We're in the middle of kind of a series of episodes centered around what we're calling streetlights. So we're excited about that. I have a question, though, for you two as we get started. Yeah. And because we kind of talked about this sort of stuff before we started the podcast, what we would do, timing wise on some things and when we might add some features or the add some this or that or whatnot. But something is happening.
Something is happening. What in the world?
And apparently
Chris made me do this.
I'm about to eat cake on camera.
This is your mother.
So if you can't see this, you're really confused right now. And if you can see it, you're also confused. That was my mom cutting across the shot right there.
There you go. And she cut across it again.
And this is like five different kinds of cake. I have no idea.
So what's the, let's see, what this is. Oh, I know. April the 4th is a national holiday. It's a national holiday.
It is.
And it is your birthday.
But I was not planning on telling that to the entire world.
But
the confusing part about this for the people who are watching / listening to the podcast is this episode will probably air in like June.
Maybe May.
Does anybody remember that today Chris said he had a crazy idea? Gentlemen,
he did say that.
Please, the crazy idea is manifesting itself. Now, there's only two people that have, but you blew it out. And so Chris wants us to sing happy birthday, but we're not going to do that.
My bad. Yeah, please don't. Yeah,
we're not going to do that. We're going to say, it's your birthday, clap, clap. All right? All right. One, two, three. It's your birthday, clap, clap. All right. There we go. Happy birthday, gentlemen.
Thanks.
Preacher in the Hat. This is in the Hat birthday party. Right,
I need a little update on like what we got here because this is.
Chris, do you have a legend for the?
Because I know.
Yeah, like, well, what do we have here? We have strawberry cake. We have some chocolate.
You're not even going to speak up over there, or are you already
speak
eating?
Up? He's Come on, Chris, speak it, up. You know what it is. You bought it.
Yeah, it's a lot of goodness.
Okay. A lot of goodness.
We're getting real specific.
We got some turtle cheesecake. We got some
turtle cheesecake.
And if it's in like a clock, the next would be almond cake.
Almond cake.
And then I forget. That's my wife's favorite right there. The chocolate. It's called a chocolate remoulade.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's kind of light with a little bit of heaven in the middle.
Heaven
and
in
strawberry
the
strawberry is. Oh my god.
Strawberry looks good. That's gonna be my go-to. Anyways,
continuing on,
I was getting into a rhythm and I was feeling really good. And out of the corner of my eye, my mom started walking down the stairs, and it looked like she was holding a flashlight. But it was just a couple of candles. So
I might say, Ed, she was very unwilling to do this.
She wrote a note on the front of the plate that nobody else saw because it said, "Chris made me do this."
Chris made me do this. So, that's absolutely the truth.
I will say, she didn't want to do it, and I know the very reason is because she knew how
you guys would like. Well. Yeah.
A mother knows her sons, and unfortunately, the father was unwilling to
step in front of that.
Yeah,
bullet.
Yeah. You went along with it. I asked him not how many minutes ago.
Yeah.
Oh, that idea Chris was talking to you about. You know,
we'll discuss later what I said.
And Dad
no
was like,
to.
"Oh yeah, no, we're not doing that.
We're not doing that."
He must have said no to something. Anyways.
Please continue.
As we dive back in, we've been talking about, or a couple episodes ago, we started talking about God turning on the streetlight for us, and then I was in the middle, I think, of talking about some things we had been talking about adding, into the podcast and that sort of stuff, and when we might get around to certain things, and I was wondering what you guys think about when we should have our first guest on the show.
Mm. When it seems right.
When it seems right.
When the theme that we're on would be enhanced by hearing from more than just us.
Derek?
Ten episodes, right, so this is 11, right? So, you know, people probably heard enough of us, so. Yeah.
Another voice.
Yeah, they're going to be like, man, I wonder when these guys are going to mix it up. So, you know, maybe sooner the better, I don't know.
Mix it up.
Well, it's tonight, today. Boom! First, let's, I want to take a rewind back to episode 9 real quick. And I just think the key for that story for me and that I would want everybody to take away from this is that when we talk about that light coming on, mm-hmm. That street light coming on and God calling us home and what he ultimately said in the story, in that parable, the prodigal son, is that it's never too late. It doesn't mm-hmm. matter, like kind of you alluded to in the past, mm-hmm. it doesn't matter how many consecutive nights you decided to stay out. It doesn't mm-hmm. matter what you did in the past. And if you think you're beyond, you know, redemption in some kind of area, it is literally never too late to see that light come on and make the decision to go back home.
Okay, so I'm going to do something we didn't plan. Come home, it's supper time. The shadows lengthen fast. Come home, it's supper time. We're going home at last. It was my mom's favorite song for me to sing when I would sing many years ago with my dad. And even without my dad, it was her favorite song. It was a song that my dad loved to hear Southern gospel groups sing. And at 1 o'clock on a Friday afternoon in November of this past year, as I found that song, or asked my sister and her husband to find that song to play it to my dad, who was on hospice and very, very, very near death. And so they played the song for him. And by his favorite bass singer, who had sung it at the end of his life, come home, it's supper time. And when you think about come home, it's supper time, some people think only in terms of the eternal, come home, mm-hmm. come home. And that's certainly that song reflects that. But if we can steal it and pull it back into this metaphor, come home, it's supper time. Because the deal is that God's calling us home. And when we get there, he's going to feed us. Mm-hmm. He's going to feed us. He's going to give us what we need. He's going to give us rest if we need it. He's going to give us all those things. He's going to feed us the things we need. Come home, it's supper time.
And I think in Luke 15, it wrapped it up, the story of the prodigal son, so perfectly, yeah. Just on what you were saying. He said, but we had to celebrate and be glad because this brother of yours was dead and is alive again. He was lost, but is now found. Mm-hmm. That's me. That's you. And that's
right.
You.
That's right.
And we are super, super excited to have our first guest with us.
Yes, sir.
And it's not over some crappy Zoom call or anything like that. It is right here in studio with us. All the way from Pensacola, Florida, Mr. Greg Lede.
Yay!
Now, Chris doesn't even have to insert the applause.
That's right. Yeah, we got the track. Yeah, we got the track for him. Greg, man, it's great to have you with us, buddy.
Well, it's good to be here. It's good to be here. Wow, it's a treat. I'm telling you.
Greg is a fan of the show. He was one of the first people to reach out to us about it as we got started. He and you and Greg have known each other for about 6 months now, right? You know, so I'm long, long time.
At least 6 months.
Long time.
How about 1985? four.
I believe he's also like already first name basis on the podcast too. He's got a couple mentions. Yeah, you've got a couple mentions. It's not just.
Well, in fact, he said, "Don't forget the 1980s." It was one of his comments on our first podcast. Mm-hmm. Don't forget the stories of the 1980s. Hello.
He doesn't even know how much stuff we got to touch on. We hadn't even scratched the surface
that's
yet.
Right. That's right.
I can only believe.
Yeah. It's all coming.
Yeah.
But I wanted to get Dad, I'll kind of pass it over to you here in a second as we get rolling. I was interested, and if you don't have an answer, that's totally fine. But from the two of you, Dad and Greg, I'm wondering if Greg, if you have your best, in whatever fashion, whatever that word means to you, your best Steve story, and Dad, if you have your best Greg story.
Want me to start?
If you've got one that's, not.
You want to start or should I start?
I'll start. And I've said this to so many people. We all meet each other in strange places in strange ways, but I met Steve in 1984, probably in November, when he walked out in the prison yard with his two little girls, 2 and 4 years old, to meet me. And in that short conversation we had, he said, "When you get out, I'd like to spend some time with you." And of course, to get him out of the yard, I said, "Okay, that sounds good."
Get him out of the yard.
And as soon as he left, I looked at my girlfriend, now my wife, and said, "What is wrong with that guy? Why would he want to get together with me?
Where do we start, Greg?"
What is wrong with that? Yeah, don't get him started, Greg.
That's a different podcast we're planning for the future.
I remember that day too really well. But one of my favorite stories, Greg's stories, is after he was out, we went to an Alabama basketball game because he worked at the University of Alabama. And Greg was not used to going to ball games without some enhanced stimulus.
Chemical enhanced.
Enhanced stimulus, you know, alcohol and or some other stuff. And so, but after he got out and he had met Jesus and he had changed his life, so he and I, along with John Drawhorn, who was a United Methodist pastor, went to this Alabama basketball game. And I remember Greg couldn't get done talking about how much fun he was having, and he wasn't even high. You know, like he couldn't believe that he was having fun with two preachers. That blew his mind that he was having fun with two preachers. In fact, I remember when we were leaving, we won that day. I don't remember the score or who we played. But you're going out, and you're stopping traffic. You know, say, "Hey, let us in. Hey, let us in." He was still his wild self without everything else. And that's one of my favorite initial Greg stories after he got out.
Am I the only one who kind of wants the account of the Methodist preacher?
Well, this cat was a crazy dude, too. Crazy.
Right. He was not a typical Methodist.
Not by any stretch. John, he was a good buddy and to me during those days in Tuscaloosa. And it was fun for the three of us to go. And Greg couldn't believe how much fun he was having. And he kept talking about it. That was pretty cool.
Awesome.
There you go. Oh,
great stories. Thank you for that. Well, Greg, we know that you have an incredible story and lots of pieces to that story. So I won't steal any of your thunder, and we'll try to poke and prod my dad to make sure he doesn't steal your thunder.
That's right.
But I want you to help us get this thing kicked off.
Well, Greg and I have talked through the years, and we've had some conversations here recently, too, kind of reminiscing. It's been cool to do that. Yeah. And but you know, we were talking about street lights, episode 9, which we played a little bit ago. You know, we finished up with come home at supper time and coming home. And so as we've talked and reminisced some, Greg, it's been kind of cool to kind of go over, and we don't have to be linear. We don't have to be da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da, but... But one of the themes that came out was that you came home at some point in your life to God the Father first.
Yes.
And that experience of coming home to God the Father, when the street lights were out, the street lights were on. It was dark outside.
This is true.
And it was dark outside. And I met you when it was at your darkest. And that was at 7 months locked up. And you were out in 7 months. Some of the guys I work with would say you didn't do much time, but like you said, when you have to use a bathroom in front of 15 guys, that's bad enough. You know, that's enough. Yeah, 7 months is a long time. So, and you're absolutely right for other reasons too. But we were talking about how that experience was where you encountered God the Father, and then you learned for the rest of your life, even up till now, Greg. And it's cool to hear your story about how God was teaching you not just how to be a father, not just how to be a husband, not how to be that, but how to be a son.
Yeah.
And he taught you. And it started when he called you home in that dark spot and the streetlights went on. So let's just hit a few high points. Just knock, you know, talk to us often, or we'll interrupt you. We're good at that, yeah, if we need to.
Well, I had made a commitment while I was in Kilby, but it was not that it was superficial, but I didn't really know what I was talking about. I just knew that the direction I had been going was not the direction I wanted to be in. Mm-hmm. And it wasn't until I went to Frank Lee and I met a preacher there. His name was Mike Darnell. And I had always had this impression of Christians being these weaker people. Mm-hmm. And, Mike was a big burly guy, you know, football player type guy. And he loved Jesus. And he came there to teach us about what it would be like to get to have a relationship with the Father. And and that changed my world around.
Well, and largely did because of your story, right?
Yeah.
I mean, you lost your dad at what age?
Three.
3 years old.
Yeah. I lost my dad at three, and my mom started seeing a guy when I was nine, and I can remember to this day when she told me that she was going to get married, and she said, "Don't worry, you don't have to call him Dad. You can just call him Chuck." Mm-hmm. And at that point, he became my mom's husband, but he did not become my dad. Mm-hmm. And for all the rest of my years growing up living at home, he was there. He provided very well for our family, but I never had any emotional relationship with him at all. Mm-hmm. But my time at Frank Lee with Mike Darnell and showing me that symbolism of God being my father changed my opinion and loosened my soul, I think, my heart a little bit.
Yeah,
and enabled me to grow in that relationship with him. And eventually, that led to meeting you. And, I think that, you know, I've said in the past that you were the first person that, on a regular basis showed me that you loved me. And
as an adult male,
Yeah. And as we joked about when I came in today, you know, back then I would have thought you were 20 years older than me.
Yeah.
You know, and we're really like 7 years apart in age, but where we were in our lives were completely different.
Yeah.
And
that is really weird because we're like 4 years apart.
Yeah.
And I just it just dawned on me recently the same thing, Greg.
Yeah.
That encounter with you were hungry for a relationship.
Yeah.
You really were. And it was cool to watch how God was putting different people in your life, you know, that were men that could help demonstrate then what it meant to have a relationship.
Yeah.
And not just with anybody, but with men that understood being a father and understood being a son. And I thought about your story really just brought some stuff up for me, you know, how powerful. And it can be negatively powerful, if I can use that phrase. Yeah. I know it's kind of weird, but like some of our interactions with our father or father figures or men in our lives, how they impact our relationship with God the Father, or how our relationship with God the Father impacts our relationship with people that are our father figure, and so that we learn, we spend in the rest of our life. Greg, there's one thing you and I both doing, and that is, we're both learning how to be a son.
Yeah.
It's weird. You would think it would be like you're learning how to be a father, but for me, it's almost like it's a lifelong process to learn how to be a son. Is that fair?
Yeah,
is that true in your story?
I think so. I think as I became to recognize God the Father as being my Father, it really pushed to the front how much my stepfather had never, I'd never allowed him to be that person for me. You know, we talked the other day about, you know, it wasn't long after I got out that I wrote my first Father's Day card to him.
Yeah.
Because we just never had that kind of relationship. And
I remember how excited you were about that.
Yeah.
I mean, he couldn't wait to tell me, guys. He couldn't wait to tell me. He was like, I wrote my first card to Chuck,
yeah.
You know, first Father's Day card. I mean, it was highlight. It was a big deal.
Yeah. And it's, you know, I think about it now. I've been, you know, he's been sick and I've been, doing a lot of doctor visits and stuff with him. And it's the rare occasion now that I refer to him as Chuck, you know, but for, you know, the first 50 years of my life, you know, that's who he was. He was Chuck. And,
yeah,
it's really a refreshing thing to what my relationship with God has done to enable me to build a relationship with him.
Yeah. It's beautiful stuff. I had a dad that I felt connected to, but I remember the impact of even when I was 12 years old, Greg, where there was this particular thing I was struggling with. And I was the kind of kid that would go to him and try to explain it to him and ask for his help. You were talking about the other night when you and I were talking, you were saying, I don't think I ever asked Chuck for anything, you know, growing up. I didn't ask him to play ball with me, didn't ask him to do that. That's part of learning how to be a son, you know? And so I was going to my dad and I was asking him, I remember one night I came to him and it was something I was struggling with. I won't go into detail, but I come to him and I say, Dad, I do this. And I'll never forget, we're out on the front porch and my dad, who was a godly man, but he was tired that night. I could tell he was tired that night. And so while we were there, I looked at him and I said, Dad, I'm still struggling with this. And he looked at me. He didn't look at me with hostility. He wouldn't look with anger. He looked at me almost with a helpless feeling. And he looked at me and said, son, I don't believe I'm going to be able to help you with that. Mm. And it was a profound struggle for me at age 12. And it was a godly struggle. It was a godly, ungodly struggle for me. Do you know it was years later, guys, that I realized how that statement by my dad, as much as I loved him, and I don't blame him, I'm not bad mouthing my dad, I'm just saying when he said that to me as a son, I actually thought that God the Father probably would not be able to help me in that area of my life. And I didn't realize till years later that that's what I thought about that area of my life. And so it's like, I don't know if it was 20 years later. I don't remember how old I was. And maybe it was in my 40s, 30s and 40s until I realized how that impacted me. So when I hear your story, Greg, it reminds me of my story. You know what I'm saying? And other people's story. Now, yeah, you guys want to jump in here and anything?
I was going to say, you know, as we've talked about, the moment, you know, where you accepted Christ and you started learning to become his son, do you think you would have ever gotten to where you are, even remotely close to where you are with your stepfather, if you had not had that relationship?
I don't think that without the change that happened to me there, you know, I lived next door to him when I moved home. Mm-hmm. But I would never have moved home. You know, mm-hmm. I think that's
and you went from Tuscaloosa back to Milton, Florida.
Yeah.
Which is where you grew up.
I don't know that I would have, and not just for him, but, you know, I mean, my mom was there too at the time, you know. But we discussed, and Steve and I discussed this today, that I don't think I would have made it through my prison time had I not made that decision. Mm-hmm. And then not making it through prison at that point, then I wouldn't have been clean when I finally got out. Yeah. And I would have been too ashamed to move home, mm-hmm. you know, because, you know, but the time that all this stuff in my life came to surface with my parents, you know, I was ashamed of myself, you know, and of course I drug them through the mud through the whole process. And so if I had not been able to maintain the walk that I've been able to maintain, I would have never felt comfortable coming back. Mm-hmm. And then we would have never had this opportunity.
Yeah.
You know?
So tell them what your conversation you and Chuck had when you were coming up here just yesterday.
Well, before that, something that, you know, there's several moments of my past that are,
yeah, stand like, out.
They're like printed in my brain. Yeah. And, back about 2004, my wife had been and I had been going to this church down the street and for about mm-hmm. 3 years. And, you know, me and Chuck had developed our relationship and we talked often. And like I say, I lived next door, so I was over there a lot. And I was out at my truck getting ready to leave and he was out there with me and we were talking. And I don't have any idea why I said this, but I said, Chuck, we're going to be going up to Pine Terrace tomorrow morning. Would you be interested in coming with us? Now, he went to church a few times with my mom, like at Christmas and Easter, but we never discussed spiritual stuff. And he kind of looked up and said, yeah, I think I would. Hmm. And he's going to that church with me to this day.
That's awesome.
You know, yeah. Sits next to me in a pew.
Yeah.
He got baptized a couple years after that. You know, it just changed our whole perspective. When my mom died in 2005, I recognized this change in him because I was right there. Mm-hmm. But when my mom died, my brothers and sisters had come home from where they lived outside of Florida. And the people had just came and picked up her body and we're sitting around in our family room. And he said, Greg, would you go back in the back and get that Bible you bought me? And it's by my bedside. And I went, got it. And he quoted three Bible references that he wanted me to read to everybody mm-hmm. and just blew everybody and blew. I mean, even though I knew he was
looking around,
I knew he was in church with me and I knew he, you know, he was paying attention and all. And, but
did you know, like in that moment that everybody's going to be, were you like, okay, this is going to be good. Cause they didn't know what's coming.
Oh yeah. I knew that everybody would be shocked.
Yeah. Yeah. You're going back to get that Bible, like, all right, this is going to be good. Well,
and of course, I was curious what he was going to, I mean, I knew he had obviously, because my mom was terminal for 8 months. Mm. And so we knew the end was coming. And so he had ample time to prepare how he wanted this end time to be.
Yeah.
And it just was meaningful that he took that advantage, mm-hmm. you know?
That's cool.
He's a very quiet person and for him to kind of take the forefront and
so that in and of itself was kind of a shock already.
Right.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, so it's,
that's cool. I had not heard that story. Yeah, that is really cool.
It was a very moving moment.
I mean,
you know, and so what Steve was talking about is yesterday I was coming home from the oncologist visit with him and my sister lives in town too. And so we take turns to make sure both of us are, one of us are in town in case he needs anything. And I was coming up here this morning and my sister's not getting in town till tomorrow. And I said, she want to let you know that I'm going out of town. I'm going to Birmingham. And he said, well, you know, what are you going to Birmingham for? And I said, you know, Steve Longenecker. And he said, yeah. And I said, he's doing a podcast and he asked me to come be a guest. And he said, oh, he says, it's going to be like an interview. And I said, well, I'm not really sure how it's all going to come together.
Yeah.
He asked me to come. I said, yes. And I said, I know it's going to be some kind of prodigal son, father or something, but I didn't know how, I didn't know what to say, you know? And I said, but when it gets all done, you'll be able to see it, you know?
Yeah. Shout out to Chuck. Yeah. Shout out to Chuck, man. Thank you, Chuck.
It'll be interesting, but you know, I can't begin to be thankful to God for all the movement of chess people in my life, you know, that got me to this point. You know,
I was also intrigued by in that last part of your story about Chuck and kind of how it seems like, and I apologize, my timeline could be off a little bit, but you know, it kind of seems like his becoming a Christian and also your mom, you know, passing away were kind of somewhat
overlapping, at least.
Yeah, it was all in that time period. I don't really know. In fact, I had to ask him a couple weeks ago
when
exactly, you know, because I mean, it was a pretty crazy time. Because I thought that that time when he started coming to church when he was earlier than that, and maybe it was, but you know, I would like to believe that you know, maybe he saw that something was happening with me that seemed to be something that was sticking.
Yeah,
you know, because I know that when I was away living with the state of Alabama, he said, well, he's either going to straighten up or he's not, you know, kind of thing. And of course I wasn't lacking in telling people what it was that got me straight. And so, you know, maybe that was an influential part in it or not, but, and it could be just that he realized that, you know, his wife was fixing to leave and maybe he was going to be alone and having Jesus by his side was a positive thing.
Yeah, I think that's an amazing step of faith, because you look at something like that, a life event like that is something that's probably just as equally likely to drive someone away from the Lord as opposed to driving them to him.
Yeah.
So that's amazing.
Yeah.
I ask you, Greg, what would your son and what would your daughter, would they say you're a good father? Would Amy say you're a good father? I know the answer to all that, by the way. I already know the answer to that. I didn't say perfect father. I didn't say perfect this, but I know about your love for your kids.
Yeah.
It's fantastic. It just struck me when we were talking about that, and then now in this conversation, maybe the best way to be a good father is to first learn to be a good son. Yeah. I'm wondering about that, because I think about what Jesus did. And then while he was here, he kept talking about his father. He kept talking about he was a son. I am the son. I'm the father. He kept talking about that. And it's almost like that really... And from previous podcasts, I mean, we talked about my understanding, coming to understand that my primary identity is son. And I think your story just bears that out so well, Greg, honestly. I mean, like, you becoming a son of the Most High God, and look how it has impacted not just your life personally, but your mama's life, your daddy's life, your family's life, your children's life, your grandchildren. Oh, yeah. Shout out to your grandchildren. hard to believe Greg's a granddaddy too, you know. But when I think about it, and then the story you tell so many other people, even though you don't like speaking in public a lot, you say.
Yeah.
But just your conversations with
people. A
public
of one is okay.
Yeah. That's a public of one. Just reminds me again that, man, our primary identity is son. And when we learn to do that, when we for the first time feel like we're a son, up until you came to faith in 20, you didn't feel like a son. You told me you didn't even know what it meant to be a son.
Yeah.
In many cases. Am I right about that?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. It's just beautiful to watch how you're becoming a son of the Most High God changed everything. And Derek asked the right question when he said, would your life have changed had you not had that encounter? But then you meet somebody like a Mike Darnell, who I knew too, who just kind of pounded that point home, relationship. And tell us what he would do. What would he do? He would come in into the chapel.
Yeah, he was far different than any of the other, you know,
ministers.
I was in the chapel a lot. Initially, it was because it meant I wasn't in there, you know?
Yeah, right.
And so you could actually have peace and quiet in there. But most nights they had chapel, I was in there. And we had lots of people, you know? And most of those people would just come in and do a service. You know, the Catholic priest would come in and he would set his table up and he would do just like it was a mass that you'd gone to on the streets. And, you know, we had a guy came from Fort Deposit that would come in, and he was a Church of Christ, I think, and he would preach for a few minutes, and then he would pack up his stuff and he would leave.
A few minutes?
But, well, I mean, how long it was, I don't know. But Mike Darnell never did that. Mike Darnell, he did the same thing every time. He would walk in, everybody would be sitting there, and he would grab a chair off the front row, spin it around backwards, sit in it, lean over the back of the chair and say, "What's going on with you guys? You know, like, I want to know what's happening. Like, mm-hmm. I'm not here for you to listen to what I have to say. I want to hear what y'all, you know, what's going on." And so he developed us this idea that this guy really cared about what's happened to us. You know, he wasn't coming here to check any check boxes off of his list of stuff he had to do this week. He really wanted to know what was going on in our life. You know, what was it like? What were we dealing with in there? And, you know, I don't know if he ever had anything scripted when he walked in the door. I mean, he might have had a whole sermon in his back pocket and just never pulled it out. But it was just always, tell me what's happening, you know. And over the course of time, people would learn that he was going to do that, and they would have stuff to ask and say. And
I mean, you know, kind of leaning back into what we were talking about there is that he was showing you what a dad looks like, what a father looks like in that moment.
That's, he really was.
Yeah, that's beautiful.
Yeah,
and what God the Father looks like,
mm-hmm. right?
To think about Him, God the Father, spinning His chair around and looking you in the eye and saying, "Hey, what's going on with you, man?" Not like he don't know.
Yeah.
God the Father don't know.
I mean, if we envision Jesus, he's not going to be sitting up on a pulpit somewhere. He's going to be like kneeling down the ground with his arm around you.
What are you trying to say? I thought it was all about... Oh, bummer. I'm a preacher in the hat. What do you mean I'm not... Relationship.
Yeah.
Relationship as father to son. Relationship as father to son. Greg, your story is so powerful. I mean, there are so many other pieces. And finally, one I want to say is that when the lights went out for you, when it got dark, one of the times it got dark is when you lost your brother.
Yeah.
When you lost your brother when you were 17. Yeah. It's when the lights went out.
That was a tough time.
Yeah.
But.
Just briefly, what happened?
Well, I was asked to bring him. He asked me if I would bring him swimming. And I said, "Well, if it's okay with Mom, it's okay with me." And she said that I could bring him as long as one of his buddies was with him. Mm-hmm. And so we went to the buddy's house to pick him up. And the mom said, "I think he's already down at the creek." Well, he wasn't. And my brother dove off a bridge that day and broke his neck and drowned. And I didn't really come to grips with it right then. It was years later when a psychologist drug it out of me that I felt guilty because if I'd have listened to what my mom said, he wouldn't be dead, you know? And, that was a tough thing to deal with. And it took a lot of years to unwind what happened during those 5 years.
And it was a year, you told me it was a year or two later that you really started getting into drugs.
Yeah.
After that experience. Well,
I left home not long after that, and it didn't take me long to
unravel.
I unraveled pretty quickly.
And, you felt like you were not a good son, but the other night, for me, it was this. Greg, you're a really, really good son. Not to me, you know.
Yeah.
I don't mean that. But you're a really good son. And that's what your life has turned from. And you know you're a good son. Chuck knows you're a good son. Your mama knew you were a good son. God knows you're a good son. You're not a perfect son, but you're a good son. And that's just a wonderful thing for me to see in your life, is that you live your life as a good son, and you have confidence now you are.
And it's enabled me to be a better father.
That's exactly right.
I think that's right. You know, I think everything that we do, if we're building in a positive way and we want that to go through the generations, you know, and I watch my son now with two kids and watch how he is raising those two sons.
Yeah.
And it makes me proud. And it makes me realize that if those things wouldn't have happened, this wouldn't be happening.
And Greg, I'm going to tell you what, I love watching these two. Just like you love watching your son, I love watching these two. And I've told them, I love watching them be a father to their sons. You know, they weren't perfect sons, but they're sons. And they were good. And they have sons and daughter, and a son and a daughter, both of them. It is one of the greatest joys is to watch sons be great fathers. It is just a fantastic experience. And how much more does God see that with us when he sees us become the sons that he's always wanted
us to be?
Yeah. That's right.
And he turns around and does that. We could keep going with Greg. We don't have to. But Greg, is there anything else you just feel like on this subject you want to tell us before we close out?
Well, I don't know. I think that... you know, for those people out there listening, I think the one of the strong points of looking at my life is that there's not a too late. You know, I know Eric was saying that in the previous clip. I think
yes, he did. It's never too late.
Yeah, it very often feels like it's too late.
Yeah,
but. It's not.
You're living proof that it's not. Yeah.
Never.
Because I was close to the end, you know, 35, 40 years ago. I thought I was near the end, you know. And he's, as it says, he's given me new life.
That's right.
So at Pine Terrace Baptist Church, shout out, right?
Yeah.
I got it right?
Pine Terrace Baptist Church,
Milton, Florida. There's a Lede pew.
There is indeed.
There's a Lede pew.
We fill a pew at the church.
It's with Chuck. It's with Greg. It's with Amy, his wife. It's with his children. It's with grandchildren.
If you took a picture of that row with all the people who sit in it and send it to 21, 22-year-old Greg Lede, what's his reaction? He's like, that is it? Are you like, that's actually not me sitting on that pew? There's no way.
Well, I tell you this, I told people when I finally got cleaned up, I lived my life in such a haphazard way because I never thought I would grow to be 30. So if you told me that at 63 I was going to be sitting in that church pew, I would have said, nah, I'm not going to get to 63, you know. And so you know, he's given me a life fulfilled in these last 45 years. And I can't thank him enough. And I try to serve him to show him how much I care about it.
Love it.
Amen.
Well, if there's ever a question of if he was able, I think you're living proof, right?
That's right.
Absolutely. Well, Greg, man. Thank you so much for being with us. It's an incredible time to be able to hear some of your story. Maybe we'll get a chance to hear some more, at another point down the road. But thank you so much for being here.
So, did we answer the question as to why we needed another guest? Did we answer that with this podcast?
I think we did.
Yeah.
I think we got it. Absolutely. I feel pretty good about it.
Yeah. Allow, this is why.
This is exactly why. And so for Derek and Steve, Chris behind the cameras, my man Greg Lede sitting across from me, I'm Eric. This has been Preacher in the Hat. We'll see you next time.